Starling Marte may be finding a new home. The playoffs of 2021 lacked that one defining game, one that seemed to happen a lot when I was younger. But am I guilty of doing the exact thing that I accuse other baseball fans of doing with ridicule? Let's find out. This is Locked On.
You are Locked On MLB. Your daily MLB podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello, baseball fans. I think I cut myself off with that graphic. Welcome to Locked On MLB, and thank you for making Locked On MLB your first listen, as we're available for free on all your podcasting catchers. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. As you can tell from the graphic right there, feel free to call me Sully if you're watching us on YouTube. This episode is being dropped on the 15th day of November. Can you believe it? We're already in mid-November. And wow, baseball was still played this month. We're not that far away, but the dust is being settled. The lockout is looming largely upon us. And I have found myself, well, talking exactly like the exact baseball fan that I always make fun of. We'll get into what I mean by that. Hey, this show is available on all the places I just said. You can follow us on Twitter at LockedOnMLBPod. Same handle on Instagram. I'm your pal Sully. I'm at Sully Baseball on Twitter, Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram. And if you have a smart device, be sure to tell it to play podcast Locked On MLB, or check out all the great shows on the Locked On Podcast Network, where it is your team every day. And not just for baseball. And we got football, college football, NHL, NBA, WNBA, whatever you like, whatever sport you like, I bet we've got highlight. And if we don't, I may do it. Remember highlight? In the 70s, that was going to be the new big sport, was highlight. Now, look, there's a lockout looming. And I'm old enough to remember what, how awful work stoppages are in baseball and how just soul-crushing they are. I was there for the 81 strike. I was there for the 85 one-day strike. I was there for the lockout of 1990. I was there for the scorched earth that ended the 1994 World Series, which would have maybe have changed the history of baseball if they had played a World Series in 1994. There's a lot of things that would have been different if it was in 1994. But that's a whole other podcast. I may have done a podcast about that. But we may still have the Montreal Expos. And Joe Torre very well may have been that, he was a good player. He managed a little bit, didn't he? Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it didn't work out so well. Because Buck Showalter probably would have won a World Series with the Yankees. And Buck Showalter would probably be rehearsing his Hall of Fame speech. Don Mattingly would have a ring. And Joe Torre would probably be doing radio play-by-play for the Cardinals. Anyway, a lot of things would have been different. And then there was not just the strike of 1994, but then there was a lockout of 1995, which led to replacement players, which led to Justice Sotomayor, before she became a Supreme Court Justice, basically ended the holdout, and there we go. So it stinks. It just stinks with a capital stinks. And it's stupid to if they lose one single game, which is why I want them to get all this done now. In fact, there's something about it which I find kind of appealing. If they have a lockout which forces people to start making their free agent signings now instead of 3 seconds before spring training begins, and if you got to work it out over Christmas time, fine, I'll watch some movies. I got to catch up on some movies. I didn't even see Nomadland yet. That won the Oscar for Best Picture last year. That's how far behind I am. I got to catch up on my Netflix queue. But that shows you the idea of our entertainment being so critical that, you know, in when they had those strikes and lockouts in the 80s and 90s and in the 70s as well, the first one was in 1972, that there wasn't as much entertainment on the ready, which is why it's so stupid to look at ratings and everything now, because we're not sitting watching TV where we're looking at our little things. You're listening to me. You're watching me. You're watching me right now. This would not have been possible in 1994. I would have been the guy at the coffee shop in St. Mark's Place yelling, as opposed to in my home yelling. But now I'm in your earbuds instead of walking. What the hell is Sully talking about? It's different. Entertainment is different. Nothing is the same in the world of entertainment and consuming entertainment now as it was in 1994. Going to the movies, not the same. Watching TV, we're watching on our device. Radio, books, newspapers, phone calls, letters. Nothing's the same. It's a completely different planet in terms of how we consume media. So the idea of baseball thinks that they can make their fans sad if they step out. No, we got a full Netflix queue. Let's go. So they better figure stuff out. Hey, one name that's floating around, I'm not going to go through all the free agents because there's almost too much of the count, but it looks like Starling Marte is going to be one of the most sought-after free agents out there, and there's a reason for that. He's an extraordinarily talented player who would help just about any old team. Now, last year he played with the Fish, and he also played with Oakland. He helped Miami get back to the postseason in the truncated 2020 season. He played well for them, but when he had a tremendous first half of the year with Miami, and then he just was a great spark plug and a little bit of a throwback player in so many ways because, yeah, he's a 47 stolen base guy. I grew up in the 1980s as a baseball fan. We'll get to that in a little bit, but I love the stolen base game. I love the players who are complete players as outfielders. And he sort of seems like a throwback to that, you know, Eric Davis, Daryl Strawberry, Willie McGee type player who has power, who has speed, who has defense and all those great qualities. And he can fit on so many clubs. There's a rumor. I know that good friend H-Town Wheelhouse from Locked On Astros, his big toe was a flickering, telling him he could go to Houston. I think that would be a great fit for him. I would love to see him go to Cleveland. Quite frankly, that team needs a big spark plug in their offense because they've got the pitching. I mentioned that in the podcast the other day. There's talk about he may go back to Miami. Wasn't the Blues Brothers sing that song, Going Back to Miami? And then, you know, the Mets are always rumored to be. The Mets are rumored to be in everybody's wheelhouse. Are they going to be Justin Verlander? Going to be Max Scherzer? Is going to be Starling Marte? It's not going to happen. Okay, you're not. The Mets can't sign anyone anyway because they don't have anyone running the show. They don't have a GM or a manager yet. What free agent would sign with them? It's like, hey, look at this. This place is in total turmoil. Why don't I sign here long term? I think he's probably going to go to Houston because I think Houston is still lined up for a World Series run. I still think it would be absolutely bananas if Carlos Correa signs elsewhere because he's so important to the Houston Astros. But if he does leave, then they'll need to have a spark plug on that team. And Marte is as good as anybody. And there's also that element of, hey, you know, you could lose your superstar and still do well. If you don't believe me, Bryce Harper left the Washington Nationals and boom, they won the World Series the very next year because other people picked up the slack. Of course, they could also put to Ronald Acuna Jr., but that's a different situation. That was an injury. So Marte could be, now look at, he's not a spring chicken anymore. He's going to be in his mid-30s, but he's got at least two more really good years in him that he could help a team win. One of the teams that he helped win, he helped contend, were the Pirates. Think about that for a second. The Pirates, they've had, since the Francisco Cabrera single drove home Sid Bream to win the pennant and break the hearts of Pirate fans everywhere, the Pirates have had three winning seasons. And they went to the playoffs in each one of those, 2013, 2014, and 2015. And I know Cubs fan with an eight is tired of having me say this, but man, I'm convinced that if the Pirates won the wild card game in 2015, I think the Pirates would have won the pennant. And he was tremendous. Stolen bases, power, gold glove, eventually became an all-star with the Pirates. And he was a great player. I wish the Pirates would go after that because I'd like to see the Pirates do well. In fact, that sentiment about the Pirates is going to be a little bit of my topic for part two of today's show. Just trust me, it's all going to make sense. It is all going to make sense. But right now, I need a little boost of energy, which means I'm going to grab me a Built Bar. Look, I love Thanksgiving, all the good food and treats and plenty of them. But if you want a yummy dessert that isn't so full of calories and sugar, that's the time for the Built Bars, just the way the pilgrims would have wanted. It's a new holiday dessert. Feast on something delicious and feel good about it. One slice of pie has upwards of 30 calories, and that's on the 300 calories. Whoa, if only it were 30 calories. And that's on the low end. Most Built Bars are only 130 calories and only 44 grams of sugar with plenty of protein. Boy, I'm doing great on this read, aren't I? Replace the coconut cream pie with coconut Built Bar, or go to the raspberry Built Bar, my favorite, instead of that raspberry pie. Lots of good flavors to replace any pie. Low calorie, low carb, low fat, high protein. Covered in 100% real chocolate, Built Bar is a great option when you're hungry. And if Thanksgiving isn't coming soon enough, go for a Built Bar too. Share some of your family gatherings. It'll make things less awkward. New surprises all month. Limited time flavors are arriving at Built.com regularly. So check the site often. There's nothing like a Built Bar Black Friday. Mark your calendar. Black Friday will be a huge event with lots of surprises. Go to Built.com. Use promo code LOCK15. You get 15% off your order. Use promo code LOCK15 for 15% off at Built.com, and you could get those Built Bars. All right. By the way, thanks again for making Locked On MLB your first listen, as we are available on all your podcatchers. I was thinking about this, and I wrote about this a while ago, and this sentiment came up. It brought up the Pirates and the fact that the Pirates had those three great years in 2013, 2014, and 2015. And in 2015, you would have thought I grew up in Pittsburgh. I was rooting for them so hard. Now, the team that I grew up rooting for, the Red Sox, they had a bad year in 2015. The team that my dad cheered for and that were my National League team, the Giants, they were the defending World Series champs. They didn't do a great job defending it. And I found myself cheering the Pirates that whole year, wanting to see them win. Now, I've been a Red Sox fan where I grew up in New England, and I remained loyal to the Red Sox, even when I lived in the Bay Area, in New York, in Los Angeles. My Red Sox fan credentials were solid. If you don't believe me, turn on HBO. I'm on HBO in the film Curse of the Bambino. But I wonder what my fandom would have been like if I didn't grow up in New England. What team would I have picked as a child if geography didn't play a factor? Why was I a Red Sox fan? I was growing up in the suburbs of Boston. Boom, you've got it. But now, with the way media and everything is set up, you could watch games and follow a team from anywhere. Geography isn't so much of a factor. So what team would I have rooted for as a child if geography wasn't the main factor? It's simple. I would have been a Pittsburgh Pirate fan. And anyone who read my old Sully Baseball blog or listened to the old Sully Baseball podcast would know why. Now, my theory, and I've talked about this, is that when you start following a team, it's the rule of seven, that your first concrete memories and your first emotional attachments that are long-lasting hit when you're around 7 years old. If you ask someone who's your favorite player, what's your first memory watching a ball team and everything like that, it tends to be, though, you just ask around. The memories tend to be when they're about 7 or 8 years old. That's why I call it the rule of seven. I was born in 72. I don't have a great memory of the 1972 World Series. Now, what team won the World Series when I was 7 years old? the Pirates in 1979. Yes, I just aged myself. Yes, I'm going to turn 50 in May. The 1979 World Series was the first World Series that I remember watching. And I can remember it like it was yesterday. The Orioles were terrific, but the Pirates were cool. Their players seemed to have more fun. Their uniforms were bonkers. And the players were disco dancing in the dugout. You know, We Are Family was playing, and they had the family written on the dugout. The Sister Sledge song was their theme song. I've written a bunch about the 79 Pirates. I've podcasted a bunch. And Willie Stargell remains one of my favorite players ever. And I banged the drum loudly for Burt Blyleven's Hall of Fame candidacy. And as for Dave Parker as well. And to this day, I get goosebumps when I hear Sister Sledge's We Are Family. And I can close my eyes and picture Willie Stargell taking Scott McGregor of the Baltimore Orioles deep. Now, years later, I got emotionally attached to another Pirates team. I rooted for the 1990 and 1991 Pirates to win their division in the NLCS. And both those years, they lost heartbreaking games. You had the Carmelo Martinez, what would have been game-tying home run in the ninth inning of the game six of the NLCS, when friend of the podcast Glenn Braggs reached over and caught it. The 91 Pirates were one swing away, one Andy Vance-like foul ball, not hooking foul, away from going to the World Series. And they were shut out at home in game six and seven by an upstart Atlanta Braves team. But the 92 team was the one that I loved. In fact, I had on as a guest Andy Van Slyke a few years ago, and we talked about that team was not the most talented, but it was the best team. Now, I was first and foremost a Red Sox fan in 1992, but that 92 team was really boring. You had Boggs and Burks were finishing out their time with the Red Sox. You had a bunch of tired veterans like Greenwell and Jack Clark and Tom Brunansky. I mean, they were a stagnant team. And when your team is stagnant, you find yourself adopting another team. Not that you're front running, but you know, my team's not contending this year. I'm going to hope this other team wins. And I found myself that year in 1992, my junior year of college, falling in love with that Pirates team, who were supposed to finish behind the Mets after Bobby Bonilla defected to Queens, along with Brett Saberhagen. But the Pirates got off to a great start. They fought with the Cardinals, Mets, and Expos until midseason, and then they just blew everyone away. They had an 11-game winning streak in late July, early August. They made a joke of the race, and there was a sense of urgency with this team. They knew Barry Bonds was going to be a free agent. They knew Doug Drabeck was going to be a free agent. They knew this was their best chance. And if you saw me during the 1992 National League Championship Series, you would have thought I was born and raised in Pittsburgh. And after the Francisco Cabrera hit, I felt stabbed in the throat. And to this day, that's one of the – I can't watch that highlight. I was crushed by that more than any event since 1986. And, you know, I've gotten on the Pirates over the years, and they came so close in 2013. They were one Andrew McCutchen swing away from beating the Cardinals. They, of course, had the horrible luck of playing the wildcard game when they faced Madison Bumgarner one year and Jake Arrieta the next. But I find myself being drawn to the Pirates of the past. I have this weird obsession with a guy named Red Oldham, who came out of nowhere, career minor leaguer, to retire three straight Hall of Famers to clinch Game 7 of the 1925 World Series. I wrote a big thing about how the Pirates in 1938 may have had a chance to be the first team to integrate. And there's some evidence, you have to read between the lines evidence, that Pye Traynor, the manager of the Pirates, was frustrated that they didn't. And he became a big supporter of integration after the Pirates passed on a chance to bring in Satchel Paige and Josh Gibson to the team. And I'm doing tons of research for the 1972 postseason book that I'm writing, which includes I've read the entire biography of Roberto Clemente. And if you can get through that biography of Roberto Clemente and not be bawling at the end that I'm sorry you don't have a heart. I have a weird Pirates fascination, and it's easier to root for teams now because of MLB.com and apps and all this stuff. And if I had all that back in 1979, I probably would not be someone who grew up a Red Sox fan. I probably would have been a diehard Pirate fan. And, you know, if that's the case, I would have missed out on the four Red Sox championships. I would have virtually nothing to cheer for all these bunch of years. But it would have been a different kind of reality that I would have lived in. And I sometimes think about that. Remember how I said in the first segment, nothing is the same in terms of our how we consume games. Well, that may be the case with fandom as well. Now, I will say that for the people who always romanticize the past, I've always been one to, I don't know, make fun of them. But I found myself the other day doing what I said I hate to do. And I'm going to talk about that in the next segment. But we're talking about how media and how we consume games and everything is so different now. Well, look, at back in 1994, you didn't have devices. You had a TV. You had a radio. But now you can have one device that lets you have the game live, another one that streams your favorite shows. You're watching sports highlights on the phone. You got your neighbor's best friend's login for the good stuff. None of this would have made sense in 1994. Does that sound familiar, what I just said? Well, let me tell you something. There's a simple way to get all that entertainment you love without the hassle, and a great way to get your TV together. It's called DirecTV Stream. And it brings your live TV on-demand favorites together like never before, so you can watch your favorite sports, movies, shows, all in one place. Now, look, at that means no more juggling remotes, no need to buy another device ever again. And the best part is there's no annual contract. Now, look, at get rid of the clutter and the confusion and get your TV together with DirecTV Stream. You can learn more at DirecTV.com. That's DirecTV.com. A compatible device is required. Content varies by package. I've always made fun of people who think that the era that they grew up in was the best. I think it's always, what a great coincidence that that's the best movies, the best baseball, the best music. I guarantee you, someone, whatever era you're talking about, called your favorite player soft and not as good as the previous generation. Yes, I'm talking, if you grew up watching DiMaggio, the previous generation said, nah, it's not as good. Willie Mays, nah, not as good. And people of the generation that rooted for them will lionize them and rewrite history. I saw something that was written, I'm not going to mention who, but it was a baseball player who has an Instagram account that I respect, an old school player who played when I was growing up. And he was talking about, some player styling at home plate during the playoffs or something like that. And he posted some clips of Reggie Jackson and Ricky Henderson saying that they had style, but they never disrespected the game and they played it right. And I burst out laughing, because if you read everything that was written about Reggie Jackson and about Ricky Henderson, at the time, they were considered everything wrong with baseball, that they didn't play it with respect, that they didn't respect the game. And now, with time and by painting with a brush of everything that I watched was better than you, they get to be the players who are, oh, they play the game right. There are people, if you read what was written about them, okay? Now, I grew up in the 90s. I grew up in the 80s. I'm sorry. I didn't grow up in the... I wish I grew up in the 90s. I grew up in the 80s. I became an adult in the 90s. But I was born in the 70s, and I grew up watching baseball in the 80s. And I'll just say this. Was there ever a run of iconic postseason moments like we had in the mid-1980s? That was my biggest problem with this year's postseason, is there wasn't that big iconic moment. You thought we were building up to it in the Dodgers-Giants series. Was the iconic moment going to be the massive strikeout by Max Scherzer or the big home run by a member of the Giants? Which one was it going to be? And turned out to be neither. Turned out to be a check swing. Not exactly picturing Ken Burns having a segment called The Check Swing. Now, I tend to hype the 80s because that's the decade where I matured as a baseball fan. And my Hall of Fame picks have a definite pro 80s slant. But when I say there was no decade quite like the 80s for iconic postseason moments, I don't think I'm seeing this through rose-colored Ray-Bans. I'm defining an iconic postseason moment as a highlight that can be easily defined with a name or a few words. The Carlton Fisk homer. The Bobby Thompson homer. Reggie in 77. The Willie Mays catch. The bloody sock. You know, Don Larsen's perfect game. If you say that, you instantly know what I'm talking about. Okay. Technically, Bobby Thompson was not a postseason game. It was a tiebreaker, but you know what I mean. But think about the postseason moments of the 80s that are just so easily, if you're a casual baseball fan, you know about the Kirk Gibson home run, the Buckner error. As overrated as that is, that game was not overrated. You had the Don Denkinger blown call. You have things like the Dave Henderson home run, the Mets and Astros 16 inning marathon, which included the Billy Hatcher home run to tie it. I mentioned Denkinger's call. You have Ozzie Smith. Go crazy, folks. Go crazy. You know, you have things like, you know, the Jack Clark home run, where you saw Pedro Guerrero throwing his glove on the ground. That these moments, when you saw it, like, you know, I mean, 86 itself had the Hendu home run, the 16-inning game marathon, Game 6 of the 86 World Series, the Lenny Dykstra walk-off home run, the specter of Mike Scott, the Angels-Red Sox series, which was bananas, just that one year. You know, you had... there's so many just incredible games that happened in that year and in that decade. And that doesn't even include things that, if you really break it down, like the greatest, arguably the greatest postseason series of all time, you can make a compelling case was the 1980 NLCS between the Phillies and the Astros. You have all these incredible moments. You have the Cubs-Padres series, which had the Steve Garvey home run and the ball through Leon Durham's legs. These iconic moments. But then am I just doing what everyone else did? Am I just saying that because it's the era that I grew up in? And if you grew up in the 90s, well, then you have the Cabrera single or the Joe Carter home run, or you have the Jim Leyritz home run, or you have Edgar Renteria's single up the middle. You have Ken Griffey Jr. racing home. And of course, 2000s. I guess I'm doing it. I guess I'm seeing it through the era bit. Was the time when I was a preteen and a teenager and was meaning the most to me. It's like the music I listen to or the movies that I'm nostalgic for just happened to be from the same era. I guess I'm guilty of doing that. Maybe I'm acknowledging I'm doing, but am I wrong? That you had in that decade, there was just a slew of incredible postseasons? Am I wrong? Were the 80s special, or does it happen every decade? It just seems special because it hit my sweet spot. Let me know. Hey, I want to throw a couple of previews out there. I got a bunch of responses about the suffering index, and a few people made some points that I'm really, really taking to heart. And I'm going to do a revision of the suffering index, trying to take into account some of the things that you suggested to make it more equitable, to make it more accurate. Another thing is I on the podcast I dropped on Sunday, I included part of a conversation with Jeff Snyder where we talked about the greatest moments in the postseason for the teams that lost that series. That would be things like the Carlton Fisk home run. That would be things like the Andy Chavez catch, the Rajay Davis home run, you know, these sort of things. So if you have any ideas for that, pass them along to me at Sully Baseball. Also, I'm doing an upcoming podcast. I'm doing some preparation for it. But in the podcast, I'm talking about the places where I watched a game. You don't have just these memories in vacuums. When you think about a game, a lot of times your memories of the game are also painted by where you saw the game. And I've listened to, watched games, sometimes in strange ways. I've been in person to a couple of classic games. That's true. But there have been also times where I remember one time I was specifically sitting outside of a comedy club waiting to go on, sitting in my car when I heard the Albert Pujols home run off of Brad Lidge. Another comedy club memory was I was in the basement of the Gotham Comedy Club, of the original Gotham Comedy Club on 22nd Street, and waiting to go on when I was there with another comic named Dana Eagle, watching the TV, seeing Mark McGwire hit home run number 62 in 1988. I also was, and sometimes the memories are weird, like I watched Game 7 of the 2016 World Series, the one with the Rajay Davis home run and the big rain delay, in a hospital room with my dad after he had been recovering from brain surgery, sitting there with the little curtains, holding my dad's hand, watching the game. So, and then there have been other times where I've watched the game in someone's home. There's other times I've watched the games in a bar. And there's a bunch of times I've just been sitting in the car listening to it. But if there's a strange place or a strange memory that you have of watching a classic game, let me know at Sully Baseball on Twitter right there. And that's going to be maybe part of an upcoming podcast. So look at memories. We're in a different world as the previous work stoppage, and let's keep that in mind. I would have been a Pittsburgh Pirate fan with the current media setup, and who knows what my fandom would have been like, but since it was in the 80s, I'm going to be looking at those as the greatest years. It's a great coincidence that I happen to be lucky enough to be a teenager when baseball was at its best. Funny how that works. Well, podcasting's at its best right now, and you could follow us wherever you get your podcasts. I want to thank you all for making Locked On MLB your first listen, as we're available on all your podcasting catchers. And hey, we're your first listen, but your second listen should be Locked On Bets, your daily one-stop shop for all your gambling needs. Locked On Bets, hosted by your boy Q, with expert analysis and insight from Lee Sterling. This has been Locked On MLB for Monday, the 15th day of November 2021. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully.